Hello, and welcome to Sobercast, where we provide AA speaker meetings and workshops in podcast format. We're an ad-free podcast, and if you enjoy listening, please help us be self-supporting by visiting Sobercast.com, look for the donate link, and drop a dollar or two into our virtual basket. We hope you enjoy the podcast. Have a great day.
Okay, I'm Randy. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Randy.
I'm so grateful to be here, and to have what I've already been given in the first three presentations of this weekend. I'm already delighted. And Peter, it's really good to see you. And Jimmy, it's great to see you too. Oh boy. You know, that was so beautiful to hear you three guys lay out alcoholism, ego, and self. And to have the message carried. And it doesn't even matter what you guys said, because you're carrying the message. The message that there's a recovery, a program of recovery here. I used to think that I could come here, that I could come to AA, and I could learn this thing. And I thought I was, I really thought, and I still do, deep down inside, think that I'm this wonderful guy. That I'm kind and generous and caring and loving, and I'm this great guy. And the only reason that I ever would act badly is because circumstances warranted that kind of behavior. I never think of myself as selfish. I only am selfish when I really need something. If I don't really need it, anyway. I have a very skewed version of who I am. My first sponsor, I talk about this all the time, but my first sponsor, when I was very new in AA, first of all, he had like 8 years and I was new, and he would invite me to go to lunch with him. I'd go to this noon meeting, and then we'd go across the street to Burger King for the salad bar, and we'd sit down and I'd listen to him talk. And I thought that I was helping this man because he was lonely and he needed someone to talk to. He had 8 years. I had like 4 days. And he looked at me one day and he said, "Randy, if you knew how sick you were, your head would explode." And I didn't really want to have lunch with him the next day. But luckily, I somehow managed to do that. I'm going to borrow some books. This is where the message is, the message of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it's in the guys that are living it. But, you know, one of the first things that I remember Bob doing was reading something out of the foreword of the 12 and 12. I never read the foreword to anything. I flipped to the back to find out how it ends first, and then maybe I'll read a little of the middle. But I don't read the foreword. And in the foreword, it's hidden from alcoholics. But it says, page 15, right? It says, AA's 12 steps are a group of principles, spiritual in their nature, which if practiced as a way of life can expel the obsession to drink and enable the sufferer to become happily and usefully whole. It's all I ever wanted. When he read that, when I heard that, I never read it. I heard Bob read it. And I thought, that's all I ever wanted. I just want to be happily and usefully whole. I didn't want to do the work of applying these principles in my life, but I knew I wanted to be happily and usefully whole. So I latched on to Ted because I knew that Ted knew these books. I could hear it when he shared. He knew the message. And he was a kind and loving man. He came across like you tonight, Peter. I mean, I never heard somebody talk about self and be so uplifting, talking about self and making me know how much love there is in this program and how much good there is. You touched my heart tonight, and it's amazing to me that I get to be part of this. And so AA, it's a group of principles which, if practiced right now in this moment, not learned and repeated or added to Randy, the old Randy, I don't get better. Bob used to talk about, I'm saying Bob said, I hate it when people say Bob said. Bob said, you know, Bob said a lot of things. But everything that he said that I've put in my life is mine now. It's mine. It's my life. And it was a gift that Bob gave it to me. And since this is a Bob retreat, I feel like I need to give Bob some love. But I don't remember what he said now. Another thing that it says in How It Works, that we read at every meeting, that most of us, you know, I used to sit there while they read How It Works, and I used to think, oh, that's for the new guy. So I'll talk to myself about how badly my girlfriend has been acting lately, or how little they're paying me at work during the How It Works part. And then when the speaker talks, I'll start listening again, because I already know how it works. But there's so much good stuff in How It Works, and I get to hear it all today. But it says, some of us have tried to hold on to our old ideas, and the result was nil until I let go absolutely. Everything that I've learned in AA, everything that I know in AA right now, this moment, is an old idea. It's stuff that I learned in the past, and it's in self now. Self knows all this stuff. So I know that if I act with humility, I'll get more of what I want. But if I'm doing it in compliance to get something that I want, it's an old idea. And everything that I know is an old idea. And this program teaches me how to become the new character in that relationship with God. This is not a self-help program. And there's no part of me that needs to be here right now to have this happily and usefully whole life. I get to let go of my old ideas. So the good news is that being here, you have an opportunity, or I have an opportunity, to have an experience where I sit in that chair and I'm filled up by being around the presence of people that are carrying a message in their actions, not in their words. And I get to just be here and ask that power to help me to be here right now. So, step one, that first line, who cares to admit complete defeat? Oh, God, I don't care to do that. I do not want to do that. That is the worst possible thing that could happen to me, besides becoming an alcoholic with alcoholism. My first thing is, oh, why did I have to have this disease? Why couldn't I just be able to drink like I want to drink whenever I want to drink and take all the drugs I want to do? Why can't I have that? I can't have that. It's been taken away, and I think that's the worst thing that can happen to a person. That's what my mind tells me. And then when Ted showed me the first line in that 12 and 12, after years of being around here and hearing about having to work this program or having to have an application of the program, I never did anything. My disease kept telling me day after day, listen, Randy, you can't have this because you didn't hit a low enough bottom. And what you need to do is go drink some more so you can hit a low enough bottom so you'll be able to surrender like the guys like Bob and Ted and those guys. They hit a low bottom. That's what my mind would tell me. And I don't know how I didn't drink day after day after day. But I refused to admit complete defeat. I didn't even know what it meant. And on page 52, somebody pointed this out to me recently in a big book study. Page 52 is the questions for complete defeat. On my own power, am I having trouble with personal relationships? Check. On my own power, can I control my emotional nature? Nope. Check. On my own power, am I prey to misery and depression? Check. On my own power, could I make a living satisfactory enough to keep me sober? No. Check. On my own power, do I have a feeling of uselessness? On my own power, am I full of fear? On my own power, am I unhappy? On my own power, Could I be of real help to any other person? That's my life. I am on my own power. Those questions pretty much sum up my complete defeatedness. I am a complete defeat, you know. But I had to go deeper for me. I had to know what a complete defeat was for my life. It's my life. What does complete defeat look like in my life, in my life? And, you know, a couple of images came to me with the help of Ted. But one of them is, I am a spiritual paraplegic or quadriplegic. And in my life, I can't get anything done on my own. I need help to do everything. Because I am a complete defeat. I'm not just an alcohol defeat. I am an alcohol defeat. I can never, ever drink alcohol again. That's basic. I gotta have that. I can never, ever, ever drink alcohol again successfully. That's a principle that I live by. And then I get a world of pain because the alcohol, like it was stated, the alcohol is the thing that treats my disease. The alcohol is what gives me a complete psychic change. No matter how much I hated my life, once I had a couple of beers, it wasn't so bad. It was actually okay. You know what? It's going to be great. Tomorrow, it's going to be a better day. Right now, I'm getting smashed. And alcohol treated my disease. And I don't have alcohol anymore. I have no treatment. I just have a mind that's unsatisfied mind. That was so beautifully spoken about. I have an unsatisfiable mind. No matter what I get, I'm unsatisfied. I want the girl so bad. I want her so bad, and I pray to God, give me that girl. And I go out of my way to be this fantastically giving, caring, fantastic guy. I work so hard at it, and I trick that girl into going out with me. And I trick her good. She actually likes me. And I told her, oh, I love you, and all this good stuff to get her, really get her, because I need her to be okay. And then as soon as I got her, oh, man, I don't want her anymore. And now I got to get rid of her. But I got alcoholism, so I can't get rid of her because my mind starts having a war about it. Alcoholism is a disease where you can't win. If I stay with the girl, I'm an idiot for staying with her because her ankles are too big. But if I leave her, I'm an idiot for leaving her because she's the best girl I'm ever going to have. And the war is on. It's on. Whenever I'm taking both sides of the story, that's when I know I'm in alcoholism. I'm fighting with myself. The debating society is inside of me. I'm taking both sides of the argument. I got, and I'm a complete defeat at not doing that. And it says nothing but an act of providence can remove this from me. An act of providence is a power greater than myself. I don't fix me in AA. And I had to learn that. And I had to, you know, I couldn't even do these steps because when I came into AA, I came in to treat my alcohol. I thought that when I got rid of the alcohol, I would revert back to that wonderful, beautiful, caring, loving, sharing, beautiful man that I thought I was inside, but I never really was. Nobody else thought that. Because my actions, I couldn't live that life. I just thought it one day. And I thought when I got rid of the alcohol, I would. But I found, you know, after the pink cloud wore off of being sober, I started hating my life again and hating everybody and everything in my life. And it got worse, not better. With time, I was getting worse and going to more meetings, and one meeting a day to start out with, then two meetings a day at a year, and three meetings a day at 2.5 years. And you can't go to more than three meetings a day and make enough money to live somewhere. So I was at the end of my rope again when I met Ted, and they started talking about the disease and identifying the disease so that at least I'm aware of what it is. And now I know what I'm trying to treat. And it ain't alcohol. It's an unsatisfiable, fault-finding, opinionated mind. And a self-obsession and an infantile ego and everything that was beautifully spoken about so far. And I've heard it all a million times, and it was like the first time tonight. Because I got to hear it right now, because my life is like you said, Peter, my life is, I'm not the man I was the last time I went to this retreat. And I need this program now, I need the treatment for my disease wherever I'm at right now. I need to be here and I need to be in my seat going, God, could you help me hear what's being said? It says in the 12 and 12, so much good stuff in that first step, but it talks about complete defeat so much. My who cares to admit complete defeat? And I don't. And that's the truth. I want to run my life. I want to manage my life. I have a delusion that one day I'm going to manage my life well, and that's going to make me happy. And I live by that delusion, and it always tricks me. This is different. This girl's different. This amount of money's big enough. This car is, whoa, Bugatti. My admission of personal powerlessness finally turns out to be the firm bedrock upon which a happy and purposeful life could be built. Imagine that. Not my learning some new stuff and acting better, not getting the girl, not getting the house, not getting the job. No, my admission of personal powerlessness, the worst. How could you ask me to do that? It's the worst thing you could ask me to do. We know that little good can come to any alcoholic until I accept my devastating weakness and all of its consequences. That's what we were doing in Alcoholism, Ego, and Self. I was coming to accept my devastating weakness and all of its consequences. And if you don't think you got Alcoholism, Ego, and Self, and you think you can still manage your life, go manage it. I tell the guys that I work with, manage your life. Do it 100%. Get your girl to do everything you want her to do, and do it now. And go to work and tell your boss how he should run his company and straighten him out and get him on the right track, because you know what's right. He doesn't know what's right. And manage that. And don't be a complete defeat. Manage your life and be really good at it. And then you'll know if managing your life works for you, because you got to know for yourself, not because I tell you you can't manage your life, or not because the book says you can't manage your life. I got to know. I had to know for my life. I had to have my own experience of this. And then as it's my experience that I can't manage my life, and that my disease is devastating. When I look at what it does to the people in my life when I'm in alcoholism, man, it makes my wife sad and fearful. It makes my daughter want to stay away from me. It makes everyone in my company looking at me like, what? Oh, he's here? It's devastating. It destroys everyone and everything in my life when alcoholism is on. Today, with lots of years, I can do it so fast. I'm so mean. Of real happiness, I'll find none at all until I admit my devastating weakness and all of its kind. Proved beyond doubt by immense experience, this is one of the facts of AA life. You know, I read that and I thought, AA life? All right, so what's the other life? The other life is Randy life. Randy life sucks. It's painful. I always lose. No matter what I get, I lose. I get the perfect job making the right amount of money. And after that first paycheck, because I always work harder than my job description, because I'm an alcoholic and I'm obsessive. So I work really hard that first 2 weeks. And then I get that first paycheck and it's what they said they were going to pay me. But I worked much harder than that. And so I'm immediately unsatisfied again. And so there's AA life. That's not Randy's life. It's a new life. And the principle that I shall find no enduring strength until I first admit complete defeat. That's the main taproot of which this whole our whole society has sprung and flowered. All the men in Alcoholics Anonymous that are happy and joyous and free are the men that are living the principle of complete defeat. You don't have to do it. You don't have to admit complete defeat, but man, it's a good way to go. And I found for my life that I could not apply any principles past step one until I admitted complete defeat. There's so much in here. You know, it says here, this is me when I came in here. Even these last gaspers. I didn't think of myself as a last gasper because I thought I had a pretty high bottom. You know, I wasn't often rolling in my vomit, although I do remember one night. But even these last gaspers have difficulty in realizing how hopeless they actually were. How hopeless I had difficulty in realizing how devastating this disease was and how hopeless I am on my own power. But when I did, and I laid hold of AA's principles with all the fervor with which a drowning man seizes a life preserver, I almost invariably got well. When I go for it like a drowning man seizes a life preserver, that's not, oh, it's Monday. I don't want to drive to the valley tonight. I think I'll stay home and watch football. Sorry. That's not how a drowning man seizes a life preserver. A drowning man goes, I don't care how bad, if the traffic's too bad, I'm jogging there. I'm doing whatever it takes to get to Monday night because that's where I get fed. And I'm a last gasper because you know what? I've had suicidal thoughts in Alcoholics Anonymous sober more than I had when I was drinking. I've thought, you know what? This is this girl leaving me. This is so terrible. I'm never going to have a girl like that again. I need to kill myself. But I was the one who threw her out. That's devastating. There's something wrong with me. The other thing is in the first step is that under the lash of alcoholism, I'm driven to AA, and there I learn the fatal, that's death, fatal nature of my disease. And then and only then do I become as open-minded to conviction and as willing to listen as the dying can be. Again, dying. This is serious. This is not a joke. People die of alcoholism. It's the only disease. You get cancer kills you. But it eats away at you and it kills you, and different kinds of cancer kills you with different speed. Alcoholism is the only disease where it gets you to go get the gun out of your closet, put it in your own mouth, and pull the trigger and blow the back of your brains out. And guys do it all the time, drunk and sober, from alcoholism, because it said, this is too much. This is too bad. You can't recover from this. And kill yourself sober. That's fatal. That's the fatal nature of my disease. I become as willing to listen. And in here I learned how to listen. God, could you help me listen? Because I can't listen. And then the last line in the 12 and 12, it says that I stand ready to do anything which will lift my merciless obsession from me. I don't know what your merciless obsession is, but my merciless obsession is to please myself. I am not mercilessly obsessed with drinking today or drugs. Sometimes they come into my mind and they sound like a good idea, which is insane. But that happens from time to time. I'm not going to say that doesn't happen. But my merciless obsession is to please self, to make enough money, to get the right girl, to get the right house, to get in the right lane on the freeway, to get the right, to pick the right lane at the grocery market, to get to the light when it's green and not red. I'm mercilessly obsessed to please self with this disease of alcoholism. And when I stand ready to do anything which will lift that merciless obsession, then I have to do the second worst thing that ever happens to an alcoholic. Once I've admitted complete defeat, I think, God, okay, I've admitted complete defeat, not even just alcohol defeat. I've admitted it. Now I got to come to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. That's too much. That's just too much. I think I'm just going to stay here and just, no, I'm not doing that. I'll learn some stuff. I'll try to act better, but I'm not going to do that. Is that it? Wow, I didn't even get into the 60 to 63 description of who I am. Can we talk about that a little bit? My sponsor had me read page 60 to 63. You know, the end of how it works, that I'm an alcoholic and I cannot manage my own life. That's step one. That probably no human power could relieve my alcoholism. That's part of step one. That I learned that I'm a human power and that I cannot relieve my alcoholism, and you're a human power and you cannot relieve my alcoholism. And that God could and would if he were sought is the beginning of step two. And then it says, being convinced I'm at step three, But it doesn't go into step three. It goes back into step one, and it reviews step one for me, that I have to be convinced that any life run on self-will can hardly be a success. That's the same. That's another way of saying I have to admit complete defeat. Complete. And then it talks about the actor, and I'm like an actor. And somebody showed me how to read this. In a way that blew my mind, like this. Randy is like an actor who wants to run the whole show, is forever trying to arrange the lights, the ballet, the scenery, and the rest of the players in Randy's own way. If Randy's arrangements would only stay put, if only what people would do as Randy wished, the show would be great. Everybody, including Randy, would be pleased. Life would be wonderful. In trying to make these arrangements, Randy may sometimes be quite virtuous. Randy may be kind, considerate, patient, generous, even modest and self-sacrificing. On the other hand, Randy may be mean, egotistical, selfish, and dishonest. But as with most humans, Randy is more likely to have varied traits. You know, I read those traits, and I think that when I'm being kind, considerate, patient, generous, even modest and self-sacrificing, I think that those are God qualities, so I must be with God. But I got to look deep inside and see what my motives are, because I can be those things if I'm going to win the prize at the other end of this tournament. If there's, like Johnny says, if there's cash and prizes at the end of the event, I can be those things for about, you know, like for a half an hour or a half a day or maybe a half a week. But I'm doing it in compliance. And I can only hold that spring down so long. Eventually I'm going to explode and I'm going to kill somebody or want to kill somebody. So, you know, you guys know the story. What usually happens, the show doesn't come off very well. I begin to think that life doesn't treat me right. I used to think I was the world's most unlucky person in alcoholism, that I always got the wrong girl and the wrong boss and the wrong job and the wrong house and the wrong everything happened to me, and that one day I'd get lucky. I thought if I stayed here and I stayed sober long enough that my life would just get good, but that didn't happen. I had to do some work and coming to believe, and I had to do some work in admitting complete defeat. And I'll end with this. Is Randy not a victim of the delusion that Randy can wrest satisfaction and happiness out of this world if Randy only manages well? That is the story of my life. I think, even coming here to this retreat, that I'm going to sit out there and I'm going to learn some new stuff and I'm going to take it back and I'm going to manage weller at work. And then everything's going to work out for me, and that's not what happens here. I get to admit complete defeat, and that's the best I can do. And I get to do it right now and listen like the dying could listen. Thank you for letting me share.
I have to read it.
Oh. Is step one the only one that Randy can work to 100% perfection?
The first half of step one is the only... No, I can't even take credit for that. Randy doesn't do any of this. The obsession to not drink and the ability to not... it is unbelievable to me that I have not drank alcohol today. It is a miracle that I did not drink alcohol today. It is an incredible miracle that I didn't drink alcohol today. So I can't even take credit for the first half of step one. There's no part of this program that Randy does. I mean, yes, if I pick up the drink, I drink. And if I don't pick up the drink, I don't drink. But I don't have the power to not drink. I just don't have it.
What do we do with the old character in step one?
Just become aware of it. Step one is like alcoholism, ego, and self. It's more awareness. I can just, in step one, I become aware that any life run on self-will can hardly be a success. I become aware of what complete defeat is. I become as willing to listen as the dying can be, only because somebody who went before me is able to show me what the bottom is and what the life is could be like if I was to go for this thing.
What if God does not do it or help?
You're going to die. I don't know. You know what? My sponsor taught me God does not make failures. I'm the failure. If I could get me out of the way and really go for this thing, then my success is assured. That's what he told me. And look at the men. Look at all the men in here. There's an erratic group of crazy, mentally ill people in this room right now. And I don't think any of them have found it necessary to have a drink today. So if you could stay sober and I could stay sober, there's got to be a power that's doing it. I don't take credit for any of it.
Thank you. One more. Maybe two more.
Does step one leave us at the turning point? And where is the turning point? Or where or what?
Love that question. I love that question. That's more How It Works stuff. In How It Works, it says that I stand at the turning point and I ask his protection and care with complete abandon, and his being a power greater than me, because I don't really know anything about a God yet. I still don't know anything about a God. I don't. There's a power that I don't understand. That I don't understand. But there's a power that's helping me. And it says that I stand at the turning point. That's this moment right now. Right here, right now, I'm at the turning point. I can either go to my mind and decide if I'm going to listen to the speaker, if I like what the speaker's saying or what they're wearing or what they look like, or talk to myself about what I'm going to do when I get back to work, or how I'm going to treat my girl after I get all this great information and everything's going to be fantastic and I'm going to get her back. I stand at the turning point. I could go to my mind, which is where the disease is, or I could ask the powers, protection, and care with complete abandon, which is a lot like complete defeat. It's abandoning that self. You know, we used to talk a lot about character, an old character, a new character, and I bring a character here. I brought a character here that gives a performance, a selfish, self-centered, fault-finding, unsatisfiable character, lying, cheating, manipulating, willing to go to any length to get what I think I need in the moment that I need it. That's what I brought here. And I'm not fixing that. That guy is not getting better. He's actually getting worse. It's a progressive disease. I can lie, cheat, steal, and manipulate better with a clearer mind with time than I could before. What I get to do here is start from scratch, stand at the turning point, and ask his protection and care with complete abandon of the other character to build a brand new character. And we're going to go into these steps. This is the way that I build the character, is 12 steps. I don't build it by not drinking.
What's the difference between admitting complete defeat and hopelessness? Isn't hope a subtle demand?
Yeah, hopelessness and complete defeat. They could be the same thing if you didn't have a power. If you didn't have a program of recovery. But see, it was read to me when we started this journey of building a new character in Alcoholics Anonymous that AA's 12 steps are a group of principles, spiritual in their nature, which if practiced as a way of life could expel my obsession to drink and enable me to be happily and usefully whole. So there's no hopelessness in that. There's a lot of hope in there. There's the promises in the ninth step, and there's all the good stuff that happens in the 60 to 63 when I finally make a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God. So there, it isn't, oh, you're hopeless now because you got alcoholism. You're going to be doomed to a life of misery. That's not what this is, a program of recovery. This is not a program of failure. And you look around at the men that have a good life and you latch onto them and you go for it and you get to have a good life. Or you can sit in your hopelessness and then you're going to drink again. Because every one of them, I would drink. If there wasn't hope that I could be happily and usefully whole, I would be happily and usefully drunk. And uselessly.
I can still tie my shoes. Am I really powerless?
Yeah, see, that's the thing. Alcoholism is very tricky. I can tie my shoes. Thank you for reminding me of that. I can take a shower. I can drive my car. I can go to work. I have a child and a wife. But I can't have any peace with any of those things with my alcoholism. I can tie my shoes. I can reach over and tie my shoes. These shoes don't have ties. I just slip my foot in. It's better. I get up faster. While I'm down there tying my shoes, if I'm in alcoholism, I start finding fault with my shoes or with the carpet or with anything I could see while I'm down there that I could find fault with. And I start finding fault. And by the time I sit up, I could be suicidal because it goes like this. Oh, look at those shoes. Those shoes are old. You need new shoes. But they don't pay you enough at work. That's because they're all jerks, and your boss is a jerk, and your partner's a loser, and you're never going to make enough money to have new shoes, let alone add on to your house. And so your wife's going to leave you, and your kid's not acting right anyway. So you should just kill yourself. Like that. I go from all I got to do is tie my shoes to I got to kill myself. That's a powerful disease. Those of you that are laughing have had trouble tying your shoes. Thank you, guys.
Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the podcast. Sobercast is ad-free, and we'd like your help in order to keep it that way. So if you'd like to help us be self-supporting by pledging $1 or $2 a month, visit Sobercast.com and look for the donate links. Thank you very much.